Welcome back to the National Rural Education Association, the Rural Voice podcast. We are excited to have an opportunity to do another great episode for our rural folks across the country. We've released several the past 2 weeks about our conference, and this kind of tags into our conference, but also tags into a lot of the work that needs to be done in rural communities. Once again, I want to remind everyone, our sponsorship for this year is Win Learning. Win Learning out of Knoxville, Tennessee, doing a lot for, social skills and workforce development. So we appreciate Win Learning and Steve Fain for sponsoring our podcast this year. I'm going to introduce Dr. Jared Bigham, who will introduce our guest today and also introduce our lovely producer from the campus of University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. So Dr. Bigham, take it away.
If you're going to introduce me, man, it should be like the Dr. Bigham. Don't just say I'm going to introduce Dr. Bigham. Man, we've known each other so long, I figured you would get that, pick up on that little.
Dr. Bigham.
And if you're excited today, I am doubly excited because I have actually got to get boots on the ground in the work we're going to talk about as far as just being in Colorado and getting to interact with some of the players in what we're going to talk about in the initiative that's going on out there. So I am fired up to start our episode today, and I want to introduce Shannon Nicholas, who is Chief of Staff for Colorado Succeeds, and Dr. Landon Mascarenhas, Vice President for Community Partnerships at the Colorado Education Initiative. And he's also a state board member for the Colorado Community College System. And beyond all that, he is buddies with a really cool guy named Dr. Jared Bigham. So I'm excited to have you guys on.
Thank you. I hope we're friends now too, Jared.
I think we are, Shannon. We have done enough Zooms and enough in-person meetings and phone calls that I think we're buddies as well.
Thank you for having us.
It's great to be here, everybody.
And if you would just give us the 30-second overview of each of your organizations, because I think that's one of the cool things about our conversation today and what we're going to look at the collaborative efforts you've got going on in Colorado and some rural districts, is that your two organizations are pretty different. I mean, you both have aims at helping students ultimately, but you go about it a couple of different ways. So Shannon, tell us about Colorado Succeeds.
So Colorado Succeeds is a coalition of business leaders. We were founded about 15 years ago to work on education issues. And the cool thing about our organization is we think about sort of the talent pipeline from early childhood all the way through the workforce. And we think about how important education is along that pipeline. And we try to get our members involved in a variety of different ways, whether that's their time, their talent, or their capital, to invest in sort of the best practices that we want to see across that continuum. So we are a policy and advocacy shop, and more we're moving into this phase of learning alongside innovators in education and workforce to understand how do we have more of this in Colorado and what do we need to sort of galvanize a coalition to do that together.
Awesome. Yes. Well, I love policy, I love advocacy, and I love shopping. So I would be right in at Colorado Succeeds. So Landon, tell us a little bit about Colorado Education Initiative.
Well, first off, thanks for having us, the Dr. Jared Bigham. The Colorado Education Initiative is over a dozen years old, and it was formed with the express purpose of being a catalytic innovator and convener for school districts and schools across Colorado. And since that time, we've worked with not quite all, but nearly all the school districts in the state on a variety of high impact initiatives. We roll up our sleeves and work alongside practitioners on the ground. Two-thirds of our work is really in the implementation space, helping school districts do transformative redesign. And a lot of that redesign work begins by bringing families, students, educators, and community members together to imagine what could be different. And I think that's really at the core of what we're here to talk about today, which is the Homegrown Talent Initiative and the opportunity to redesign rural education and economic development together.
Yes, the Homegrown Talent Initiative, it was the joint partnership between your two organizations, and it's a collaborative of rural districts. And I'm going to let you give us an overview of that work, and especially one phrase, term, word in particular that has been coined during this work, and that's educonomy. So tell us about HTI and the educonomy that you've got going on in this collaboration.
You want to go for it, Shannon?
Yeah, I'll start, but feel free to jump in. You know, we 3 years ago, we surveyed the landscape of Colorado to understand sort of what is happening in high schools. And we realized that a lot of our metro areas were able to provide more relevant experiences for students through things like work-based learning and career-connected learning, because they had industry and partnerships sort of readily available to students. But what we saw was a gap in our rural communities. And so we had a number of philanthropic partners who really wanted to push into space and place that didn't have the same kinds of access for students. And through the great partnership with CEI, we were able to identify a number of regions in our state that had unique assets and were able to really think differently about the kinds of experiences they wanted to provide for students. And we really came at it from the same way that our two organizations are coming at this, you know, thinking about students, thinking about families, thinking about the K-12 system, the higher ed system, and the business and civic community in your region as one intertwined sort of educonomy, one community that really needs to be thinking about what do we want for our future, for our region, for the kids in our community, for the expansion of, you know, sort of new economies, knowing that the world is changing, the world is becoming global, there are dying industries, there are emerging industries, and how do the entire community come together to have that conversation together?
Go ahead, Lynn.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I first heard the term educonomy from the former lieutenant governor of New Mexico, Diane Dennisch, who was from rural New Mexico, from Hobbs. And she really did a lot of pretty impressive work bringing workforce and education partners together. She used to often talk about that term, and it really connected with me back in the day. And when I came to CEI and started working on this project with Shannon and both of our two teams, you know, it really felt like a very important anchor concept for our communities. You know, we are working in 8 different communities around the state that are in various different types of rural communities. I mean, I taught first grade on the Navajo Nation in New Mexico in a pretty rural community called Church Rock, New Mexico, and spent some of my time, a lot of my time working in rural communities in the first part of my career. And I'll tell you, you know, we got communities that are tribal adjacent. We got mountain communities. We got plains communities. We got kind of distant bedroom communities. You know, just the thing that's really exciting about the Homegrown Talent Initiative, to Shannon's point, is that we're helping communities reimagine who all should be at the table and have a different type of conversation with them. And at the same time, they're sharing power with folks in their community. Our two organizations are spending time to work together in different ways, because that's a part of the change that we need to seek.
You know, I've got a question. You know, reviewing the work, talk to me about the graduate profile. I want to know a little bit more about that and why that's so important.
The graduate profile is a really powerful place to begin the work. Colorado Education Initiative has worked on, graduate profiles for a few years prior to this project, and found when we worked on them in communities and districts, they became a really powerful North Star for the set of efforts, and that when they're not there, that often school districts or systems or communities lack a shared language, a shared vision, and shared schema for how to actually make change together. And a really important component of this project is the idea of exemplars. St. Vrain, which is a kind of exurb of the Denver metro area, which has done some pretty incredible work, received an I-3 grant. And then Canyon City, which is a rural community located between west of Pueblo, kind of off near near some pretty incredible natural beauty. And both of these districts had graduate profiles, and their graduate profiles allowed them to, through a co-creative community-driven process, have a different type of dialogue about what they all aspire to, what are the competencies and traits graduates or learners should have. And through the course of the first year of this Homegrown Talent Initiative project, we had communities build graduate profiles. And we asked them to say, you know, you will include students, families, community members. You'll have multiple iterations in the process. It's very easy for a school district to build a graduate profile. You get a bunch of educators in a room and say, hey, you know, what do you think kids should learn? It's a very different thing to actually include students in the design of these projects. So when you actually look at the graduate profiles on the website, the Homegrown Talent Initiative website, or in the report, you'll see you know, the visuals, the water wheel in Clear Creek, the corn out in the plains of Holyoke, the Ute Mountain in Cortez. And those, many of those designs and examples come right from families and students who shared that vision together. And now when you go into some of these communities like Clear Creek, you'll see the graduate profile actually in local businesses and community centers because it's a shared community aspiration of what everyone can achieve.
Yeah, that is the marketing and branding and kind of coming together by a common cause. That's so great, and it means a lot. And I know being in a collaborative, you do go with the willing, you do go with folks that want to work with you, and vice versa. But it is collaboration's always tough. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, and I'd love to talk about that collaboration just a minute, because I think honestly that's the essence of this work. I mean, you got the programmatic stuff that you have to have at the district and school level, and those connections you have to have with businesses and post-secondary. And so there's a lot of the programmatic things we could talk about, but really, to me, the hardest thing to do in rural work is forming collaboratives that are sustained. And that was one of the things that came out of the SERPE report that was just released on that has been studying what you guys have been doing for the past couple of years. And SERPE, the Center for Reinventing Public Education, was that there was sustained systematic change. And to me, that is so difficult. So can you talk a little bit about forming the collaborative, you know, because there were, you actually took applications from districts to be a part of this HTI initiative, but not everyone made it. And then there was some attrition along the way. And as somebody that's formed rural collaboratives and seen some success and seen some failures, how did you get that coalition of the willing, and what's that dynamic like?
I think, you know, like Dr. Pratt said, we started with folks who raised their hand, right? And we were looking for a set of readiness criteria, and that could be a number of things. I think we were interested in folks who had started to do partnership, maybe in small ways across sector, who had leadership willing to kind of, you know, be nimble and agile in their design, and clearly an openness to listening from, you know, from students all the way into community. And as we gathered folks together in those first couple sessions, I think there was a sense that even in these small rural communities, many of those people had not sat around a table together. You know, this was one of the first places that they had kind of come together around a common goal and a common vision. And so that became a really powerful place to source new ideas and information from. But also, as we went straight into a pandemic, these communities had to rely on each other for way more than the graduate profile and the redesign of high school. They started to have to navigate major health challenges, school shutdown, economy challenges, and there was a convening body that they had become used to collaboration and coordination. And I think we have some clear examples of communities throughout this project that we're able to rely on each other in a different way through, you know, an unprecedented time, and even make progress on their projects because of the spirit of collaboration and kind of the energy that they had brought together months prior to that. So we got incredibly lucky that we had launched 9 months before the pandemic and then had some success through it.
You know, one thing I want to add, and I think you know, going through this information, you looked at the assets of the community. So many times we come in as a deficit as far as what we don't have. And I think that is very important. Could you talk a little bit about, both of you talked a little bit about looking at the positives and what a community has to offer and a school has to offer?
Well, you know, it's a, I really appreciate that. You know, I think that my experience working on education in rural communities is that we have so many assets in our rural communities. And that actually a part of our role as a support partner, intermediary, helping to try to get them to that sustained systemic change is to let them go on their own journey. That we're not going to precondition the journey for them. We're going to set some, my dad often says clarity is a gift you give to yourself and other people. We're going to be really clear about what they need to do, what the type of design work we want to see is, but how they do it, the pace in which they do it, the structure in which they design it. Each of our communities have a different flavor of that. And I think you see that in the research and in the article. I think that that's a critical aspect of the way we approach this. You know, we've had to have very difficult conversations with communities, but let's be real. Like that's a part of our obligation to them is to say, hey, you know, what's going on? Are you okay? How can we help? We notice something's off. And, you know, more often than not, it's just an opportunity for us to go deeper into the relationship building work. And the relationship building work has really been the priority. You know, we talk a lot about adaptive versus technical change. We really have prioritized that adaptive work, that mindset, values, relationship, deeper connection, because that's where we are getting to the real assets in the community. And we see through the course of the project, all different types of new initiatives starting to spin out and become connected to the homegrown talent design work that occurred. And these rural communities they already had vibrant ecosystems, and their ecosystems are becoming more vibrant through some of that catalytic relationship building. And it's just been an unbelievable thing to watch as they grow and become more dynamic. And I think that as we, to Shannon's point, you know, we got real lucky with the timing of this project. But, you know, if we didn't have open minds and open hearts and open wills of these leaders and openness to co-creating with their community, really hard to imagine them thriving during the pandemic and getting to a spot where they're at right now.
Yeah, that was one of the things that highlighted and underlined when I read the report from SERPY, is that it said, despite the roadblocks that the pandemic put in their way, HTI communities took bold steps toward this vision. And I mean, to me, that stands out above all any of the programmatic data and things like that, and how many students enrolled in programs or new programs created. It's just the fact that they still tackled the work when they could have very easily said, we're just trying to tread water right now, keep our head above water. We can't fool with anything new. We can't. And I saw that with some districts that I'm consulting with and working with, that they just, you know, threw up the white flag and said, it's just too much right now. So, man, it was awesome that they just put their head down and kept, you know, bulling their way forward.
Yeah. One of my favorite quotes during that time was one of our superintendents was on a panel, you know, conversation with other leaders in the state, and, you know, middle of the pandemic, lots of just craziness happening around us. And she spoke to her colleagues and she said, we cannot go back to normal. And I think that just speaks to the leaders that are in this project who, you know, the pandemic only heightened the need for this kind of work and this collaboration across the community. And she just has leaned into that so deeply and leveraged this as an opportunity to innovate instead of coming with that deficit and the challenge. She's found more and more opportunity and her community has responded. So those are the kinds of leaders that we're working with. And as you can imagine, are incredibly inspiring and want to make this work happen for all kids in their communities.
Yeah. When I read the report, again, that one thing that stood out was there was a section called Dispositions and Mindsets. And there were three things that were identified that I think sometimes we see that we're almost numb to these phrases, but whenever you look more granularly at the work you're doing, those three really, man, it blew me away. So one was innovation, two was equity, and three was user centered. And you know, we throw out innovation all the time, and I think sometimes innovation is just a willingness to expand what's already working. And yeah. Some of the districts definitely did that. And then the equity issue about giving access to all students, no matter the socioeconomic background, but really that the user-centered part and how, yes, there's a systematic change. And yes, there's these overarching programs at each district, but ultimately it came down to those individual students and the ability to support them through these different pipelines. So, you know, I don't know if you want to speak to that of my bragging on the work or not, but and give some more perspective. But I just thought that was one of the best parts of the report.
Yeah, I think that I would say that the dispositions and the kind of guidance that we gave them during the first year as well, which is kind of like help them understand how to access the grant dollars. You know, one of the things that I think is I got to give a lot of credit to Colorado Succeeds. They built a significant coalition of funders that were really excited about this work, and therefore that opened up a lot of dollars for these communities to access. And we had to be really clear with them, aligned to the dispositions around kind of what, you know, hey, you're gonna go through this process, you're gonna do the design work, you're gonna build your profile, you're gonna build an implementation plan, you're gonna operationalize that according to the dispositions, and that's gonna be how we are, you know, you're gonna come to us and say, we need X amount of dollars, and we're gonna just ask you, how is that all lined up? Again, every community is gonna look different, it's gonna feel different, it's gonna have a different flavor to that, but it helps us build coherence around the opportunity for that deeper relational change that we seek. And it helps us push the communities and I guess maybe nudge them in directions that they know they need to go in, and it helps them build that internal political momentum. Because as I think everyone who's worked in rural communities know that, you know, a part of this work is bringing the whole community along for the ride. And I think our best leaders in this project have done that. Their boards are invested, their communities, their business partners, and they see the link to all these different components. And the next stage is really gonna be about going deeper, leveraging their RISE grants, which we talked about in the article, the American Rescue Plan dollars. We think this is just a potentially transformative moment in education and in economy in these rural communities. How do we take the momentum that these communities are building right now, aligned to these dispositions, and really supercharge them with even more dollars, more partnership, and more energy?
And I'm going to add something. This is not, I mean, I'm going to give a disclaimer that this is my personal opinion in NREA. What you're describing in this is how the federal government approach to education should be. It should be, because when we pass things in DC, it usually set up for urban schools. Let's just be honest. This setup is ownership, and it meets the needs and fits the needs of those local communities with their buy-in and their you know, process going through it. So I just want to say this is amazing. I appreciate your efforts, and I know folks in Colorado feel the same way. And do you think this is replicable in other states? And have you been to that point yet?
You know, first of all, thank you so much, Dr. Pratt. We're incredibly proud of what we're doing, and we also know that we're early in our journey. So there's some humility as we go through this, and especially given we know what we've learned in our rural communities is they're all very different. And so we hope that there are tools and supports that we could share out with, you know, a national audience about what we've learned. But I think what Landon has said, and is so key, is there's been a push and pull here the whole time around responsiveness to each individual community. And so you have to have this tight, loose concept around how much you let a community drive the process in the way that it's needed and also drive towards outcomes. And I think that that is oftentimes a challenge of scale. And I think that this is something that our SERPI colleagues are pointing out too, is, you know, we really want to always put things into a pretty little box, disseminate it out to the community and say, here, just follow these five steps and you're ready to go. And I think we are learning through this partnership and through this deep engagement work that it doesn't exactly go like that. And so I think there are things we could share and learn from each other and continue to build out a rural network across the country of shared learnings. But I think we would both probably hesitate at this point to say, you know, you can replicate everything, because we, even in each of our eight communities, it's looked slightly different.
The thing that's a constant, though, is the collaboration. And as someone who has worked in both type of organizations that are similar to Colorado Succeeds and Colorado Education Initiative, I know that that's could be a weird dynamic at times, but you guys seem to be really making it work. So you've got that collaboration that's layered on top of the district collaboration. And so it's an awesome model. I really do hope you get the opportunity to share out with other communities across the nation. And so we're now at the point in our podcast where I typically ask the Harry Potter magic wand question, but since I know Landon is a Star Trek fan like me and Dr. Silver is a Star Trek fan, I'm going to change it up just a little bit. I'm going to get crazy and I'm going to say, if you were Q, you know who Q is, if you were Q and you were able to snap your fingers, Landon, and do one thing for the HTI work, what would it be?
Oh, mon ami, what a great question. Snap my fingers like you and do one thing for the HTI work. I mean, the thing that I would snap my fingers and do, which is what we're actually about to do, I want to snap my fingers and get it done early, is start the kind of process that's going to be building learning amongst the different eight communities in a much deeper way. You know, I'm really inspired by Margaret Wheatley's work on translocal learning. The idea of not moving for replication, but moving for adaptation. And how do we build the culture across the eight communities to go significantly deeper in learning from each other? How are they leveraging their ARPA dollars, their RISE grant dollars, their kind of future visions? And to me, that work has to then now really bring along economic development folks. It has to bring on business entrepreneurs. They've been along for the ride, but now the next stage is really to start to build some of that, to build that next stage of the edge economy in each of these communities from the learning and from the energy, I think.
I like it. Okay, great. So Shannon, put you on the spot. Are you a Star Trek fan? Do you know who Q is?
No idea, but I get the gist of the question.
You get the premise of the question. Okay, well, I'm going to put the same question to you, and this will give you an opportunity to go Google who Q is. So what would you, if you could snap your fingers and anything happened in HTI work, what would it be?
You know, I think some of the things that I've been learning through this pandemic is just the access to technology and how that's been a differentiator for so many students. And I do think that will continue to impact the future of these edge economies in terms of what broadband can bring to a region, how people move to certain places because of accessibility. And so for me, I know some of our communities are still struggle in that way to have full access and connectivity. And I just think that there's an openness to the world that kids can access when they have, you know, internet that works quickly and connected, and the industries in your area just open up immensely. That's what we've seen in Canyon City with an investment in broadband. They were able to attract and recruit an entire different economy to that region. And so I think that that's something that would just, Colorado has a long way to go to making access equitable across our state.
And Colorado's not alone in that. So that's a great point. Well, thank you so much, Shannon and Landon, for joining us. I am personally invested in this work since I got an opportunity to get on the ground and see the collaboration that was going on. And so I'm so excited to be able to share it on our podcast and wish nothing but the best for you guys as you continue to plow through the work. So thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you all. Thanks for being there for rural communities across the country.
Thank you.
That concludes another amazing episode of the NREA Rural Voice podcast. Thank you for joining us. Tune in next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast and website are those of Dr. Alan Pratt, Dr. Jared Bingham, and Dr. Christopher F. Silver, and do not represent the affiliated universities and or any organization affiliated with the hosts. This podcast and the accompanying material, including our website, represent the opinions of Dr. Alan Pratt, Dr. Jared Bingham, and Dr. Christopher F. Silver, and their guests to the show and website. The content here should not be taken as medical or professional advice and should be used at your own risk. The content here is for informational purposes only and should be understood as such. The Rural Voice podcast or its hosts do not endorse, approve, recommend, or certify any information, product, process, service, or organization presented or mentioned in this podcast, and the information from this podcast should not be referenced in any way to imply such approval or endorsement. Further, the content of this podcast are the property of the National Rural Education Association and are protected under U.S. and international copyright and trademark law. No other use, including, without limitation, reproduction, retransmission, or editing of this podcast may be made without prior written permission. By listening to this podcast, you agree to the terms and conditions, and while we make every effort to ensure that the information that we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or corrections of errors. Thank you.